This WBEZ podcast is supported by Wise, the app for international people using money around the globe. With the Wise account, you can send, spend, and receive in up to 40 currencies with only a few simple taps. Download the Wise app today or visit wise.com. Terms and conditions apply. Be smart. Get Wise.
What's up, Chicago? I'm Erin Allen, and this is The Rundown. One of the things that brought me to Chicago and keeps me here is how easy it is to get around without a car. Now, the CTA is far from perfect, but it is better than a lot of other cities I've lived in where cars are king, point blank period. Here, I can ride my bike in a bike lane, take the train to almost all of the places that I need to go, and I can do something a lot of us city folks take for granted. I can use the sidewalk with pretty much no problem. But I can say that because I'm not living with a disability that limits my mobility. Plenty of people in Chicago, though, do have these types of disabilities. Whether they're unable to see traffic signals on the street or unable to wheel around barriers like curbs or stairs or broken sidewalks. For these folks, it's just not as easy to get around. It's National Transportation Week, so today we're going to talk about why that is. Back in 2022, I invited Yochai Eisenberg onto the show. He's an assistant professor of disability and human development at UIC, and he's also a researcher at the Great Lakes ADA Center. Back then, he had just co-authored a study about accessibility with both of his organizations. And after looking at various communities around the Chicago area using the Street View tool on Google Maps, what they found was that communities had higher accessibility scores if they had what's called a barrier removal plan. Basically, if your community has a plan to remove the common barriers that slow people down, you know, like what I just mentioned, cracked sidewalks, curbs without ramps, etc., then these communities are often more accessible for people with disabilities. And he says they make the larger community in general more safe, regardless of ability.
I think it tells the drivers, it tells people who are in that area that it matters that you're a pedestrian. And I think that's what, you know, a lot of people would like to hear, that you matter in what you're doing, no matter race, you know, gender, that you should feel safe, you know, walking or biking here.
I started by asking Yochai who ends up using sidewalks in a big city like Chicago, which sounds like a silly question, but his answer actually surprised me.
I think one of the interesting things that people don't know is people with disabilities actually walk for trips and take transit for trips at a higher percentage than people without disabilities. Sidewalks are a key piece of infrastructure, and people who with disabilities who are navigating on sidewalks are using them but still encountering barriers and finding ways of navigating around those barriers. A lot of times you may see people who use wheelchairs navigating in the street using the bike lane instead of the sidewalk when they encounter barriers as well. But the sidewalk's a key component, right, of being able to start to use public transit. If you want to be a bus or train user, right, like you were saying, it's very easy. It's all over the place, but you have to get to the bus and then you have to get from the bus or train stop to where your final destination is.
Let's talk about the types of barriers. What would be a barrier?
Yeah.
You know, give me some examples.
Yeah, definitely. So there's the pedestrian signals themselves. The city of Chicago had a big lawsuit. I think it was 2021. Related to the lack of fully accessible pedestrian signals that have the beeping or auditory signal for a crossing. And there's, you know, they found something like 99% of the signals in Chicago don't have this. And so the lawsuit set out a plan for moving forward and removing those barriers and making more fully accessible pedestrian signals. There's attitudinal barriers. The ways that, you know, people without disabilities in society view people with disabilities and the kind of experience that people have as a person with a disability, how they feel treated by other people and looked at and that whole experience. If you think about sidewalks, right, there's can be surface problems with the sidewalk. Tree roots lift the sidewalk up and make it so that there's a big level change. Where you walk from the sidewalk to the street, that's called a curb ramp. And many places are missing curb ramps, so it requires someone to have to step down to go from the sidewalk to cross the street. And crossing the street can feel very unsafe. So I think safety comes into this a lot. When you see these barriers, when people with disabilities encounter them, it really becomes an unsafe situation.
Mm-hmm. Wow, thanks for going through all of those. So you worked with the Metropolitan Planning Council to do a study specifically about walking and wheelability in Chicago.
Yeah.
I'd love to hear you talk about what you found.
Yeah, definitely. So this was a great partnership between the Metropolitan Planning Council and the Great Lakes ADA Center. And essentially, we wanted to conduct the study that I did similarly in nationwide, where we found that many communities don't have what's called ADA transition plans. And it sounds like a very technical word, but I kind of try to describe it as a barrier removal plan. But the degree to which communities have made progress in that barrier removal is one, unclear, but two, from the data that we have, that communities have collected, it appears that it's nearly half of the infrastructure is inaccessible, or nearly half of the infrastructure has barriers. So that's what we found nationally. We wanted to repeat it with the Metropolitan Planning Council locally, and we found very similar rates, where I think it was about 11% of the 208 communities, I think, around the Chicago area had what this barrier removal plan called an ADA transition plan. And then that the quality of those plans really varied, right? So if you think about, you know, what makes a good plan, right? It's a plan that involves the public. It's a plan that sets out a schedule that notes who's going to do what and when it's going to happen, when these barriers are going to be removed, and then has some kind of accountability, right, of monitoring and noting when things are going to be improved. But what we found is that many of those plans really were all over the place in terms of quality. There were some great examples and then a lot of, you know, variety in how good those plans were. And then, you know, I guess the point I try to make is that how likely is a plan to be implemented if it's low quality, if it doesn't say who's going to be in charge of implementing it, if it doesn't say when specific barriers are going to be removed, if they haven't really done very much public participation. You know, I think to kind of look from the local government side, it's a pretty tricky situation that they're in, or a situation that in some ways a lot of them would like to avoid. And I think that's, you know, perhaps the stance that people have taken, because there's this fear that if you start to address it, if you start to think about the ADA, if you start to collect data on barriers, then it's going to open you up to lawsuits. And lawsuits are a real thing. The city of New Orleans is an example. They had a data, they had a plan, and then they sat on it. They didn't do anything for 10 years. In 2021, they had a lawsuit that where a judge ruled that you guys are not doing anything. You had this plan. You were supposed to remove these barriers. You didn't do anything. You know, we're going to make you put up a lot of money up front right now and work towards removing barriers.
So you're talking, I mean, you've mentioned several lawsuits at this point. That sounds like, you know, that's the penalty. Like, that's what happens when cities don't invest in this and do it up front. It's kind of like apologizing later as opposed to asking for permission first.
Yeah.
What else? What are other repercussions to cities? I mean, and are those not good enough incentives?
Yeah, I would think that they would be, you know. I think somehow many cities just think it won't happen to them in a way. But, you know, I would say that lawsuits have really been the main way that these plans and that barrier removal has happened. And in some ways, the main driver of success for communities becoming more accessible. And then what happens is the communities around that city that got sued are like, oh, I don't want that to happen to us. And then they start to, you know, do some work towards development of that plan.
It's a ripple effect.
It's a ripple effect.
Interesting.
Yeah.
There is a push for the city of Chicago to be responsible for clearing the sidewalks of snow as opposed to like individual residents, business owners. Right. Can you talk about how this factors in here? Has there been any movement on this? Do you know?
Yeah. No, I've been trying to follow a little bit. This is a campaign by Better Streets Chicago and Access Living, a joint campaign that they're trying to use examples of other cities that are doing some of this. I think they mentioned like Wilmette and Toronto, where the city is taking a more active responsibility for clearing the snow. And I think, you know, the city likely thinks this is a very daunting task, right? But I think with a pilot, you could really see how might this work, right? And learn ways that other cities, test out ways that other cities are doing that and have some evidence that could support, you know, clearing the snow, because people need to get to work. People with and without disabilities need to use the sidewalk infrastructure and do so safely.
Yeah. If a person is feeling so moved by this conversation or just really starting to think about this a little bit differently, like I was when I started to come across your research, and they want to get involved in making the area more walkable and wheelable, what would you suggest?
Yeah, definitely. I think, you know, contacting your local government is a great first step to find out where they're at. You could reference our report, which is on our Great Lakes ADA website, to know if your community has a plan. And then you could start to work to advocate for creating a plan. And one of the key, another project that we're working on in our center is related to a crowdsourcing tool called Project Sidewalk, which we're deploying in the Chicago area with lots of different partners, where we're trying to collect data on accessibility. It's a virtual crowdsourcing tool. So speaking of winter, this is a great activity that involves mapping and labeling with Google Street View imagery and noting where there are barriers and where there is accessible sidewalks and curb ramps and infrastructure. And this data is going to be directly used for improving the infrastructure.
Great. Well, thank you so much for your work. Yochai Eisenberg is Assistant Professor of Disability and Human Development at the University of Illinois at Chicago College of Applied Health Sciences. He's also a researcher at the Great Lakes ADA Center. Yochai, thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you, Erin.
That initiative to get the city to plow the sidewalks Yochai was talking about, well, a pilot program passed in Chicago's city council last year. The results of that pilot are expected sometime this month. And that's it for today. Justin Bull, Sarah Stark, and I produce The Rundown. Ariel Van Cleve edits the show. Brendan Banaszak is our executive producer. Our theme music is by Louis Weeks. The Rundown is produced by WBEZ Chicago and is a part of the NPR network. I'm Erin Allen. Thank you for listening. I'll talk to you tomorrow.